from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
It's estimated that nearly 300,000 child soldiers are actively involved in armed conflicts throughout the world. Although the images we typically see of child soldiers come from Africa, it's happening all over the world. And joining me now as part of our weekly underreported feature are Bukeni Beck, director and founder of Ajedi Ka Child Soldiers Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Hakima Abbas of Witness, and Joe Becker, Children's Rights Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch. I'm very pleased to welcome you all to my show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Bukeni, the UN has set a deadline for the militias in eastern Congo to disarm by tomorrow. How likely is that to happen?
Many children is known that they have been recruited as soldiers in the Congo. Boys and girls, and this is a war crime recognized by the Roma Statutes of the International Criminal Court, who is now investigating in the Congo. And since the UN has some offices who are working on human rights and is concerned by this issue of child soldiers, and I'm not sure if this deadline will work really on the field.
We're talking about the former Zaire, the former Congo, now the Democratic Republic of Congo. What role are children likely to play in the disarmament process? Is it difficult, as far as you know, to demobilize the children?
These children are playing a major role in this armed movement because there are so many movements in the Congo who are using child as soldiers. And the majority of soldiers in this armed movement are children. So to demobilize them, it is easy maybe, but to reintegrate them, it is very difficult.
And we'll look into that later. Joe, how much of a problem has that been throughout the world? Is there any way to protect children if the international community chooses to intervene?
There are a number of different ways that the international community can protect children from recruitment into governments and armed groups. It takes a multi-pronged approach. I mean, one is having strong international standards. And thankfully, we have that now. In 2000, the United Nations adopted a treaty that says that no child under the age of 18 should be involved in armed conflict or should be forcibly recruited. And in the last 5 years, nearly 100 countries have ratified the treaty.
Of course, 18 is an arbitrary age. And in some countries, under 18 is considered a child. In other countries, 18 is already a working member of society. People are married, having children. I suspect that the places where we have child soldiers is that the children are considered children at a much earlier age and become adults at an earlier age.
Well, in some ways, 18 is an arbitrary figure. But on the other hand, for well over 10 years, the United Nations has considered 18 as the dividing line between childhood and adulthood. In most of the countries around the world, 18 is the minimum age for voting, for example. So it is recognized. And, you know, I think you're right that in many cultures, you know, you have children taking on adult responsibilities at an earlier age than you would here in the West. But at the same time, talking with parents, talking with community members, you know, in Africa and Asia and Latin America, you know, the vast majority, the strong sentiment is that, you know, children under 18 have no place in war.
Bukeni, what part of Congo are you from?
I'm from Eastern Par in the province of South Kivu in Uvira.
So that's where most of the fighting has been taking place.
Exactly.
And you say that the majority of the soldiers are child soldiers?
Exactly. They make about up to 60% of all of the combatants.
We're talking about both sides, both the rebels and the government's army?
The government, not really, but in the militias, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
60%?
60%, exactly.
When did you start your child soldier project?
I started with this issue of child soldier. It was in 1998, and now it is 7 years ago.
And that's not when war broke out, is it?
Yeah.
Were there child soldiers in Congo before that time, or is this something that's only happened since 1998?
No, because the first war began in 1996. By ousting Mobutu, former regime, who was a dictator. So in 1998 began the second war, who have divided the country in three big parts by different rebel groups. So I studied by this because at that time I was interested by a parent who wanted to know some information about their children who have been abducted and used by a rebel movement. So I started just by knowing how the situation, taking some information from the combatant group, because those parents wanted to know if their children are still alive or not. So I started just by experience, and after that, across the year. So up to now, I'm still working on this issue.
Even though the war officially ended in 2002, did any of the children involved then go back home?
There is some who we demobilized, because since 1998, we have already demobilized about 300 child soldiers, among them 40 girls. And it's not just the only number what it can be to say that there is just those children who have been demobilized and reintegrated, but there are still so many children who are still into armed group and who need to be demobilized. We hope maybe by national programs and the effort from local and international NGO, these children may be demobilized and reintegrated.
Well, the tensions have increased in recent times because of what's been happening between Rwanda and the transitional government of Congo. Hakima, if the international community goes in there with force, and there has been talk of that, will these children be caught in the crossfire?
Certainly. I imagine that children, because they do make up the large proportion of combatants in the area, they will be the fighters on the front lines, and certainly they are at this time. Going back to the age and 18 being the minimum, I think what should be noticed is that the majority of these children are between the age of 8 and 16.
Which generally abducted when they're as young as 8?
As young as 8. Some are also voluntary recruited, although that's a very small percentage of the amount of child soldiers.
Well, it's one thing to volunteer because you think you want to go to war. It's another thing to actually have to endure all the problems of battle. What happens when these kids discover that perhaps this is not what they wanted?
Certainly. And I think the strong point that you make is that the psychological impact and the trauma on these children is certainly something that's very difficult for them to cope with at such a young age.
How does the number of child soldiers in the Congo compare to, say, Rwanda or Burundi or Uganda, where it's also been a real problem?
It's really hard to come up with specific figures. There are some estimates that there are 30,000 child soldiers in the DRC. You know, whether that's the actual figure, we don't know. In northern Uganda, there have been well over 20,000 children abducted by a rebel group called the Lord's Resistance Army.
Who make it their policy to do that.
Yes, they literally kidnap children out of their homes and, you know, use them to fight supposedly against the Ugandan government, but in actuality what they're doing is committing atrocities against civilians, looting, and abducting other children.
And, well, in their case, they also have a policy of making sex slaves out of the girls that they abduct. Is that typical? Is that what's happening in Congo as well?
Yeah. If children, boy and girl, are recruited, either voluntarily or by force. But we must recognize that girls are just not only combatant, but they are used for sexual exploitation by combatant. And this is very, very dangerous to them because they are submitted to many consequences on mental on and also on their health.
Now, this has also happened in Sierra Leone, Liberia. Joe, we're talking about African countries. Is this something that grows out of African cultural history, or is this a global problem?
Not at all. This is a global problem. I think, as you said earlier, a lot of people associate the issue of child soldiers with Africa. But in fact, there are large numbers fighting in the conflict in Colombia, for example, with the paramilitaries, with the FARC, with the ELN, and large numbers of child soldiers in Asia. People are always surprised when I tell them that the largest number of child soldiers in the world is actually found in Burma, where the national government has been recruiting tens of thousands of boys into the national army to control the civilian population and fight against armed ethnic groups.
So in that case, it's the government that is employing the child soldiers.
Exactly. Probably the majority of child soldiers are found with, you know, opposition armies or rebel groups around the world. But there certainly are a number of governments, including the Ugandan government, including the Burmese government, and a few others as well.
Do you see any thread that would suggest a certain conflict would involve child soldiers while others don't?
Definitely. Conflicts that continue over a long period of time often end up with large numbers of child soldiers, because as the conflict wears on and older soldiers are killed, then there's a pressure to pull children in to sort of, you know, keep up the strength of forces. Certainly, conflicts that are within states are much more likely to involve children than conflicts between states, in part because in those internal conflicts, the dividing line between civilians and combatants is blurred. The, you know, war zones are not clearly defined, and children are caught up as both victims and as perpetrators. And then also any situations where you have large numbers of children who are vulnerable, either in terms of being out of school, being displaced from their homes, being separated from their families, being impoverished, that's a very ripe population for commanders to recruit from.
We have to take a little break here. We'll be back with more of this. My guests are Joe Becker, the Children's Rights Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch, also Bukenny Beck, Director and Founder of Ajedika, Child Soldiers Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Hakima Abbas of Witness. This is WNYC. Stay with us. We're back with Underreported on the Leonard Lopate Show, and a look at the situation globally, where 300,000 child soldiers are estimated to be fighting in armed conflicts. My guests are Bukenny Beck, director and founder of Ajedika, Child Soldiers Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Hakima Abbas of Witness, and Joe Becker, Children's Rights Advocacy Director of Human Rights Watch. You said that some of the reasons that child soldiers are enlisted is simply because they're available in large numbers. Are there any other reasons that they might be enlisted? Are they preferable in some ways to adults?
They're very vulnerable just by virtue of being children. Children are much more easily manipulated than adults. They're more gullible. And so they can often be talked into, you know, recruitment in a way that adults aren't. They might be, you know, lured into an armed group simply by being promised a small amount of money, you know, one hot meal a day. And oftentimes they're prized because they don't fully understand what they're being asked to do. They might be told, for example, in some instances we've heard that children are told that if they wear an amulet around their neck or if they smear their bodies with a certain oil, it's going to protect them from bullets. And so they do this, and then they run off into battle. And, you know, they're fearless because they believe what they've been told. And, of course, they're mowed down by the opposite side.
They're also sometimes convinced to stay through intimidation, through drugs.
Yes, yes. There are certainly many cases where children are given drugs, given alcohol, and certainly threats. We were talking about the Lord's Resistance Army a little while ago, and that's a group that keeps its children through terror. Children are told that if they try to leave, they will be killed, and in fact, if they try to, they're hacked to death by other children who are forced to carry out these horrible acts or be killed themselves.
Well, we've heard about the most awful atrocities in places like Sierra Leone and Uganda, where limbs have been severed, where there's been a lot of rape, people have been forced to murder their family members, there's been cannibalism in some cases, I guess as a test of loyalty. Is that typical for child soldiers, or is that something, are we only hearing the most extreme cases, Hakima?
In many conflicts, that is typical. Certainly in the DRC, what we've witnessed is children being forced to commit atrocities within their own communities so that there is stigma and that reintegration is more difficult and that there is fear of returning home. Certainly added to them committing atrocities is the psychological trauma and effects that this would have on the children themselves. Again, when we talk of girl soldiers and rape and forced pregnancy, whatever the atrocities are there, again, the psychological impact on these children make it very difficult for them to reintegrate into society.
And the forced pregnancy also ties them to the group that they're fighting with because they feel they can't go back.
Absolutely.
And
it's family. To some degree, these armies are also their family.
Sure, sure. And this makes their reintegration to be more complicated because not only we'll try to see the direct consequences of this enlistment of children into combat, but also the thorough consequences, which is for example, those children who are born from those rapes, that will constitute a very big challenge in our local society. And I think maybe we could try to think about what an emergency solution can be undertaken in order to solve that problems. Yeah, and also as well as also the problem of HIV, who is now spread at a very high level into armed movement because there is no any control of sexual relations. Yeah,
you're collaborating with Witness on a documentary about child soldiers, and I understand that you videotaped some of the militias in the Congo. Did you find that the child soldiers expressed a commitment to the group that they were fighting with, or did they say, I'd really like to be able to go back home?
Both. There is some who want really to go back home, and some doesn't want to go back home. There is so many reasons, like as mentioned Joe Baker. But with the video, we want to sensitize people to make advocacy on the recruitment of child soldiers.
And you'd videotape the training that these kids went through.
Exactly. There is so many aspects in the camp and after being reintegrated in the local community. So we try to gather some witnesses and aspects in the camp to try to convince the public, because our first video was just that was targeted our local community in order to, if they can discourage that recruitment, because there is some parent, there is some community who believe that if they encourage their children to join some militias, this will be their effort in them of their protection as well as a sense of patriotism. So we try to target the local community and together those aspects to say no because of this. Yeah.
That's something that we rarely hear, that the parents are encouraging their kids to join for, as you say, for a number of possible reasons, patriotism being one of them, but also the feeling that they will then be protected if their kid is in the army. Were the militias perfectly happy to have you film within
yes.
their camps?
Yeah.
What did they think was happening?
Some are just for children, for example, they are happy to say what they need on the video. And the commanders, really, they are not happy for that because when we tried to prevent the recruitment and to encourage the mobilization of child soldiers, that seems to the commander that we want to reduce the number of combatants, and so they cannot be happy, really.
But yeah, and I'm sure that they're not, they don't admire human rights advocates like you.
Exactly. They cannot, because myself have been arrested 4 times in doing that. But I think that it is a fight what we as a human rights defender, we have to continue and struggle.
Were there equal numbers of boys and girls?
No, it's not equal. Because, for example, girls represent about 5% and 10% of the combatant child. So even if they represent the small number of combatant, of child combatant, but the girls are submitted to many violation and duties in comparison with boys. Yeah.
Joe, child soldiers have been a part of war and conflict throughout history, haven't they? Is the problem worse now? Are the numbers rising, or are we just more aware of it now?
It's certainly been a problem for centuries, but it is in some ways uniquely a product of modern warfare, and it certainly has been much more serious in the last few decades than, say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago. And part of that is because of the changing nature of wars, more civil conflicts within countries, the evolution of modern weapons technology. And the proliferation of small arms around the world. I mean, the fact that you have, AK-47s that are as cheap as the price of a textbook in many countries means that these weapons are more readily available and commanders are far more likely to put them into the hands of children. When weapons are in short supply, commanders are going to, reserve them for their older, most experienced fighters, but especially when the weapons are so easy to use and a 10-year-old, can, use a semi-automatic, weapon as easily as an adult, why not use the 10-year-old?
My guests are Joe Becker, Children's Rights Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch, Bukeni Beck, Director and Founder of Ajedika, Child Soldiers Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Hakima Abbas of Witness. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Hakima, are the people in Congo as shocked by these stories as outsiders are? Do they see this as something that, do they see it from a very different perspective because they're in the middle of it?
Certainly, they see it from a different perspective because they live the war on a daily basis. But I think it's definitely for any mother anywhere in the world seeing their child in combat or having them know that their child is facing the danger of death and possible rape and all the atrocities that the children do suffer is heartbreaking. While we were talking about some parents who encourage their children to go into war, I think one of the things that Bukeni's been instrumental in doing is showing these communities and these parents, bringing the camp life into their arena and showing them what these children actually do suffer and how this is terrible for their children.
And as you say, it's being screened throughout Congo. I understand it's also going to be shown in New York.
Yep. We have... The first video was actually distributed to civil society organizations in New York and in the states in general. But the second piece will be launched on the April 12th. We still haven't got a location, but it will be. We will be announcing that on our website.
Details posted on Witness website, www.witness.org. I got it right?
That you got it right.
Now, we've kind of skirted around what happens when these children, when there are attempts to reintegrate these children back into their societies. I'm sure some of them can't go back because they are now hated as enemies. What happens to those kids? And what happens to kids who only know a life of fighting and violence, suddenly told, well, it's over, you can go home now?
And there is some children at their integration into armed combat. They are submitted to some traditional practices, which are, for example, they have some kind of gri-gri, means those form of ritual.
There's a cleansing ritual
at their integration into combat. So these And those products, what they have into armed combat, that means to smoke drugs, those kind of gris-gris and the tattoos, what they are submitted to their physical corpse, and those kind of life, what they have now taken habit to live into bushes. And this kind, those makes their integration to be very hard and very difficult. So I think that at the ritual in integration could be opposed in another ritual at their reintegration into civil society. I know that they are not all children who are submitted to those rituals, but due to those kind of violence, what they committed into their own own locality, their own community, because there is some traditional into armed combatant, which says when you are a soldier, if you want to be a strong soldier, try to kill your parents, because when you kill your parent, so now you have a mind of a really soldier and you can have pity to anyone. So this kind of practice of teaching where what they have, and also they do that.
They actually kill their own parents to prove
exactly
the point.
They go into their own community and cause violences into the in their own community. So this this just to try to make difficult their reintegration into society and to have another mind of social. So this kind of practice makes difficult their reintegration, of course, for some children.
What has happened in some of the other countries where where the conflict has ended? For example, in Rwanda, where the Gacachas are taking care of the justice, at least on a local level, we're talking about people now in their 20s who may have done all the terrible things when they were still teenagers. Are societies treating them as child offenders, or are they treating them as people who killed in ways like we've just heard, sometimes killing their own parents?
I think in most cases, societies are recognizing that these children are victims, that they were, you know, pulled into a situation and forced by circumstance, or, you know, literally at the threat of a gun to doing horrible things. And there's a recognition that that this is the case. So, for example, in Sierra Leone, you know, there was a special court that was set up to prosecute, you know, war criminals from the conflict. And there was a decision that, you know, the court was not the most appropriate place for children, and that it would be better for children to go through a truth and reconciliation kind of process where they can, you know, acknowledge some of the bad things that they've done, but still be accepted back into the community without being treated as a criminal.
Still, these kids who've only known lives of violence, whether they're treated as criminals or not, the adjustment that's necessary has to be incredible.
Well, it could be very difficult, and we don't want to underestimate that. But on the other hand, I think it would be a real mistake to say that these children are, you know, forever damaged by their experience. I mean, I've met some incredible former child soldiers who want nothing less but to put the violence behind them and to, you know, continue an education and to start families and get jobs and to contribute to their society. And many of them, because they've seen violence up close, are so much more committed to peace and to justice and making a positive contribution. And they just need the support to do that. And I think beyond sort of dealing with the, you know, some of the psychological elements that Bukeni was talking about, the other thing that's really important is giving them the practical support that they need, making sure that they can get back into school or that they can access vocational training programs and gain some skills that will, you know, help them in a civilian society.
Bukeni, when you have offered these kids a chance to go through a reverse ritual that would then cleanse them of all the things that the previous ritual had coerced them into doing, has it worked psychologically for them?
We have not yet really tried this kind of ritual of cleansing, because in the Congo, in the part where I'm living, war is not yet stopped. We still in war. But if we just demobilized and reintegrated them, is we recognize that it's our work, and just we can advise to do these rituals. But we have noted, for example, in 2003, some children, what we taken them to school, about many of all of them didn't succeed at the first year at school after being demobilized and reintegrated. And this caused some kind of disappointment into school. And some tell, okay, as I can't succeed to school, I've spent my whole year and I didn't get anything, so what can I do again? So this means, I always advise that we could make research in what is really, really better for these children to be really reintegrated instead of just giving just some tuition fees at school or something. We have to make research in finding what is better for them.
Certainly, I think the local and international organizations play a big role in the reintegration of child soldiers, and I think that's where a long-term engagement in these conflicts is necessary, because as Bukeni's suggesting, that the short-term solutions and engagement isn't necessarily enough, and that there has to be a support for the reintegration of child soldiers over a longer time. And I think justice also plays its role, both at the international level and the local level.
Well, also, people have to be able to talk about mm-hmm. what they went through, and that's always very difficult. We had the experience on this show of talking to a mother, a leader of parents who were trying to get their children back in Uganda. And the second time we spoke to her was after her daughter had escaped and come back home, and her daughter was going to come on the show as well, but she couldn't do it. She just couldn't work herself. She just couldn't get together all of the strength and the courage to talk about this terrible ordeal that she had gone through. And I suspect this is it's going to take a long time for some of these kids to be able to accept themselves again as people who are worthy of living in regular society.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, but thank you so much, Bukeni, for what you're doing in Congo, and all of you here for the wonderful work that you're doing. I want to thank you so much for participating in today's Underreported. We've been speaking with Bukeni Beck, director and founder of Ajedi Ka Child Soldiers Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Hakima Abbas of Witness, and Joe Becker, Children's Rights Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch. And remember, the film that Bukeni and Hakima have been working on will be available for screening sometime in April, April 12th, we think. And if you want to find out more, just go to the website www.witness.org.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard LoPage Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.